As you can see, I have chosen as my topic keys to aging. And there are some keys to aging, and you can learn what these are and slow down the aging process. So far as I know, there isn't anyone who has ever found the fountain of youth, even though there have been many who have looked for it. But so far as I know, nobody has ever found it. And so we can all expect to age, and we can all expect that eventually we will reach the end of our aging. And if that should be the interest that you have, then I hope that you will listen to some of the things that I have to say. The first thing, you will notice that the item number one is to cut your calorie intake by about 30 to 50% after you reach a certain age. Now, reaching this certain age, there's no magical number about it, but when you begin to feel that you're slowing down, then at that point you should start cutting your calories. And notice that I did say up to 50%. You can cut even more than that, and some of the animal studies indicate that if you cut more than that, you will even live longer. Now, the next thing is that there's an increase in vitamin E intake in people who are going to live much longer. And you can get vitamin E. Don't get it from a pill. You can, of course, get it from the drugstore, but I would like to invite you to get it from your groceries, from your food. And some of the things that can help you are wheat, nuts, flaxseed, green leafy vegetables, and that will result in a 30% reduction in death rate in many people. All causes. That's whether even with such things as murder and suicide, this is all-cause disease, and that will reduce your likelihood of having an early death. Now, let's discuss some of these things that have a lot of vitamin E. Wheat is, of course, one of those, but notice that that is wheat. It is not refined wheat. And so if you want to get the very best from your food, get the whole grains. When I speak of whole grains, or when I speak of a grain, whether it be wheat or oats or barley or millet or whatever, when I'm speaking of grains, it is whole grains. Those are the real grains. Now, there are some grains that come in a reduced form. That is, they are not very helpful to the body. They do give energy, but they don't have all the nutrients in it that you can have if you will take the whole grain. So I would like to encourage you, only eat whole grains. And then have a high intake of beta-carotene. Beta-carotene is the half molecule of vitamin A. So if you need vitamin A, that means for skin, for hair, for eyes, for general health, vitamin A can be obtained from beta-carotene. Beta-carotene is obtained from green leafy vegetables. Most people don't know about that. They think only carrots and other yellow fruits and vegetables will give them beta-carotene. But you can get that certainly very well from dark greens, any kind of greens, even such things as purslane. You can get it from that as well. You should avoid drugs. That's pharmaceuticals. Now, drugs represent the fourth leading cause of death, probably in the world, but especially in the United States. But drugs are dangerous for the health, and we should always think of that, that even when we're going to go down to the drugstore and get something that's over the counter, we should still recognize that this is a powerful chemical and that it can cause you to have a loss of your life, and certainly a weakening of your immune system and a reduction in your life. Then another thing, take an apple or a kiwi or a cup of blueberries or many other good fruits that are highly colored. These will give you a good lease on life, and you will find that this will increase your health It will increase your immune system and make things so that you work, your body works very much better. And obey all the natural laws of health. These are those things like nutrition, but also like fresh air, a lot of water, both inside and out, and that the water that you take can be fresh water, not the kind of water that has a lot of additives in it or contamination in it. And then such things like sunlight, and let me get to that next, and that is controlled sunning. Controlled sunning will help you to live longer. Controlled sunning will make it so that you have less cancer. And someone may say, but less cancer of everything except for skin cancer will give me skin cancer. And the answer is no. Even skin cancer is less likely to afflict you if you have controlled sunning. Now, what does that mean? That means that when you get into the sun, it is enough for your skin. That doesn't mean enough for my skin or someone else's skin, but know who you are and what your skin is like, and then you can make a decision as to how long you should stay in the sun and get the exposure to it. So let me encourage you with all of these laws of health. Rest is another one, and I'd like to mention a couple of things about rest. One is that you should take your rest before midnight if you can. The rest that you get before midnight is worth roughly twice the rest that you get after midnight. And so resting is by all means that most important of health principles. It is one that gives you a hormone called growth hormone. And growth hormone is something that adults need as well as children. Adults need it to grow, children need it to grow, but adults need it so that they can be organized, so that they can be cheerful, so that they can keep their desks clean, so that they can remember their schedules. Lots of good things growth hormones do for us, and a number of other hormones are also dependent on growth hormone. Keep intellectually active. Intellectual activity can keep your mind bright, can keep your memory vibrant, can make it so that you run a few other parts of your anatomy and physiology much better, because this will help you to get a wide variety of other hormones going well. Now let's take the next one. What things change with age? Some things do change with age. One tends to slow down a bit. As we get older, we tend to not be as strong as we once was. But a number of other things happen also as we get older. One is that personality may actually improve. People may get a bit more vibrant. They may get also a bit more personable. They may be more healthy in their personality. So these things may actually get a little better. But certainly personality does not greatly change. That is, you do not ordinarily become depressed or out of sorts or not pleasant to be around. The personality generally keeps about the same. Vocabulary continues to grow as you get older. That's a very nice thing to know, that you don't have to lose your vocabulary as you get old. Vocabulary can increase almost day by day. Also, memorization can also be better as one gets older, so that as people get older, they can memorize the scriptures better. You may not have known that before, but that's a great thing to know. Reasoning and problem solving, that may be maintained right into advanced old age and should not be any worse than it ever has been. Memory declines, that's true, but what is remembered as accurately as ever. But now I'd like to point this out, and that is no matter who you are or what age you are, even my 10-year-old grandson, he has a problem with his memory as well. I can tell him to do something, and he says, "Grandmother, you told me to do something, and I've forgotten what it was. And it may not have been more than 10 minutes ago." And so even when you're a very young person, you may still lose your memory. So that it may happen when you're older, that's no surprise. But that does not mean that you're getting Alzheimer's disease or senile dementia or something else. It may be just that your memory declines just like anybody's does. Next year, you may not remember some of the things that are very bright in your memory right now. Vigorous activity should be enjoyed right up until you're in your advanced old age, like into your advanced 80s and the like. Now, what are some predictors of aging? Some things that you may find will help you to know whether you are aging or not. One of those things is climbing stairs. Can you climb stairs as well as you always have? Or maybe just with a little bit of effort, you can become even a little better at climbing stairs than you were, say, 10 years ago? And what about walking half a mile? Walking half a mile may be easy for you, but it may not be easy. If you can walk half a mile and still be able to carry on a conversation with someone without a lot of effort, that may be a sign that you're not aging rapidly. On the other hand, if you cannot walk half a mile without undue fatigue, this may mean that you need to work on your health, or you can expect that your health is not going to maintain itself. You should be able to walk at a normal speed. You should not have to slow down as you get older, but should be able to walk at a normal speed. You should be able to walk up a hill or upstairs or find your seat in a meeting. You should be able to do that with the same kind of speed that you always have. Now, what about arising easily from a chair? That isn't easy for most people. And so I will tell you a little in a moment what you should be able to do at each age after the age of 50. Maintaining your balance. Can you maintain balance without holding on to a railing or without holding on to a chair or some other thing that may help you to hold your balance? So let me encourage you to learn to be a well-balanced person physically. 70-year-olds in the middle range are of this strength, of the things that I have mentioned to you. 70-year-olds are 75% more likely to become disabled in the next 4 years than those who are in the highest range, whose physical health was the very best. And so, of course, we want to be in that group. Now, those who are the least well-favored in age are those who are in the least, the lowest scale with these items of strength that I have just mentioned. In fact, they are 400 times more likely to become disabled in the next 4 years than those in the highest. So those are things that can help us to know whether we are in good shape or we need to work on our health. Now, chair stands that I mentioned a bit ago, from a straight back chair without using the arms, that means you're seated and you just hold your arms up like this and rise from the chair without any assistance, no pushing up from here, no pushing up from the seat, no pushing up from your knees. A 50-year-old should arise 30 times in 30 seconds. What about a 60-year-old? A 60-year-old should arise 20 times in 30 seconds. A 70-year-old should arise 15 times in 30 seconds. And an 80-year-old should be able to arise 10 times in 30 seconds. If you can't do that, that may mean that you have a problem. Now, some psychological factors that predict aging. The first one is conscientiousness in childhood. Were you a conscientious child when your parents told you to do something? Were you willing to do it? And did you do it with a desire and with completeness? those people tend to live the longest. So that's good. Another thing is controlled personality. There are certain things that we do that we should be controlled in. One of those things is our love of music. If when we hear music, we cannot refrain from standing up and down and dancing around and waving the arms and this kind of thing, that is a sign that you might age quickly. So maladjustments of any kind, maladjustments to life, to your own aging or whatever, any kind of maladjustment to your class, to your neighbors, to your family, any kind of maladjustment does indicate a factor of aging. Marriage stability. The more stable your marriage, the greater the likelihood that you will live to advanced old age. Then volunteer work. Number of studies have been done showing that volunteer work is likely to give you additional years of life. 1 or 2 hours a week only can give you several years of additional life. I like that idea. Controlled emotional response to a variety of things, like music that I mentioned, but also to irritations and annoyances. If you do not have control over your emotions, over your anger, over those things that have to do with the way that you live with people, if you do not have a controlled emotional response to life, it is unlikely that you're going to live to advanced old age. Now, there are some nutritional factors that I'd like to mention. First is folic acid. And I'd like to tell you what folic acid is. Most people know that that's a thing that comes in a pill, and that's true, it does. But it also comes in our food. And some of the food that we need to have daily, or almost daily, is that contains folic acid. Now, if you know anything at all about Latin, you will know that folia means page or leaf. And so the nutritionists in an early age, when they first discovered folic acid, they found it in leaves, and so they called it the vitamin of leaves, or the nutrient of leaves. And so it is. It does come from leaves. So we get a lot of folic acid from leaves, and folic acid should be taken every day. Folic acid can be found in many other things, you will find that you especially need folic acid if you have certain conditions. One condition is that of homocysteine. Homocysteine may be a word that you've never heard. Certainly until about 10 or 15 years ago, almost no one had ever heard of homocysteine as being a physical condition or a mental condition. But folic acid deficiency may be especially likely to occur in people who are on the pill, people who are pregnant, people who have a high homocysteine, or people who have certain other conditions. All of these may need more folic acid. And if you need more folic acid, eat more greens. Soybeans. Soybeans do a number of things for us. Soybeans will help us will slow down the aging process. It will slow osteoporosis. And if you already have osteoporosis, it will keep it from getting a lot worse. That's a good thing to know. And soybeans will also help you if you have kidney disease. And taking a little protein from soybeans, not as the protein, the highly purified protein derivative of soy, but from the soybean itself, if you have the soybean itself and take 1/4 cup of cooked soybeans, whole soybeans, this will help you to build your kidney disease. So if you have a low functioning kidney and your creatinine is creeping up year by year, your BUN is going up year by year, and your glomerular filtration rate is going down year by year, You can expect that you may have dialysis somewhere in your future, and you can prohibit that by a number of things that you can do. And one thing is quarter cup of soybeans. Another thing, that's per day. Another thing is drink plenty of water. Drinking water helps to flush the kidneys and to keep the kidneys youthful and healthy. Keep your immune system high. That means doing all these things of the laws of health, having a good lifestyle, eating your whole grains, sleeping well, getting a nap when you're tired or in the middle of the day. I'm sure that somebody is not going to like me for saying that, but that is a fact. Tests have been done which show that people who get a nap at least three times a week during the day, that they enjoy life for a much longer period of time. And so that's a good thing to know. Vitamin E, we mentioned that before, but vitamin E can be can help you with a number of very good things. One thing is that it reduces the brown pigment in your nerves. Well, since the brain is a part of the nerves, and we get, as we get older, a brown pigment. And the less good food that you take, the less food that you take that is good, the more junk food you take, the more brown pigment you will develop in your nervous system, your brain, and your entire nervous system, including your peripheral nerves that move your extremities. All of your nerves get more brown pigment if you don't have enough vitamin E. Acetyl L-carnitine, this also reduces the brown pigment in the nervous system, and that helps you not to get aging of the brain. I think of all those things that we fear the most, besides cancer probably as our number one fear, but with our health, the thing that we really fear the most is probably that of Alzheimer's or losing our minds. And so anything that will reduce this brown pigment will help us a lot. Citrus pectin. Know that the pectin in citrus is largely located in the fibrous part and not in the cellular juicy part. And so we need to get plenty of that. That means actually eating the citrus itself and not just juicing the citrus or buying the orange juice. And Florida Citrus Commission is very adept at helping you know that it is good that you drink orange juice, and that may be. But it is also true that the flavones and the flavopectins, a large part of those are in the white part of the citrus, and so eat plenty of that. Now, red bell pepper. Red bell pepper is high in vitamin C, high in B vitamins, high in a number of antioxidants, has many different compounds that make life youthful and make it so that your brain stays youthful and so that you can live longer. One study was done in rats. They gave a certain percentage of the rats' diet as red bell pepper, and they found that these rats could learn to walk through a maze much quicker than those who did not take the red bell pepper. Now, the way they made them take it was that they simply took the red bell pepper, dehydrated it, and ground it up and put it in their food, and they had to take it. So they knew they were eating it. If they were eating the food, they had to eat the bell pepper. Blueberries. One cup of blueberries will greatly increase the likelihood that you'll live longer and will help you greatly in making your life better. Antioxidants reduce aging. And where do you get antioxidants? Of course, from fruits and vegetables and many foods in the what we might call the vegan group of foods. And you also get antioxidants from vitamins C and selenium and vitamin A and vitamin D. All these are places where you can get antioxidants. Now, lifestyle factors in aging may include such things as the avoidance of certain solvents. And there are a number of these solvents that you can easily avoid. Gasoline sniffing should not be a part of your system at all. And many other solvents, even those solvents that we use to clean house with, many of these will increase the risk of your aging. One study was done showing that women who clean their homes with the, shall we say, the best or the worst of the solvents, these were more likely to live less long than those who used just ordinary soaps in their cleaning, house cleaning. Then weak joints will also run a risk for you to make your life less long. And how does that occur? Well, it's pretty easy. If you have weak joints, you're not going to be able to have as good a balance as you could have if you had good strong bones and joints. And you're also more likely to fall if you have weak joints or weak muscles. And if you have these weak extremities, then you will fall, and you are more likely to fall. And if you fall and have a broken bone, that may be your very first downward slope in to death. So get plenty of exercise so that you can keep your bones and joints and muscles strong. Now, exercise also helps you to have good lung function. If you can take a big breath and blow out a whole cake full of candles, that's pretty good. And especially if you're over the age of 50 and you can blow out 50 candles or more, that's very good. And it's likely that you're going to live longer because of the fact that you could blow out all these candles. That means your lung function is good. Keep your lung function good by plenty of exercise. Walk up a hill. When you walk up the hill, breathe in deeply through your nose and out through the nose. You breathe in through the nose to prevent things from polluting the insides of your lungs. And you breathe out through the nose so that you can retain the moisture that you would otherwise have lost. And also so that you can warm the inhaling passages, so that when you breathe in again, you air condition and warm the blood, the air that's coming into your lungs. The lungs are filled with a meshwork of capillaries, and these capillaries will make it so that you can take in oxygen and give off carbon dioxide. Exercise also improves coordination, so that when you walk, you are more coordinated. When you do anything, you're more coordinated. We should practice such things as these little bouncing balls on a paddle. Many of the Asians buy these little balls not for their children, but for their elderly, and train them to bounce this ball just one time after the other, and they have to look, have to watch where they're going, have to move the paddle around so that they keep the ball in the air. And if you can learn to do that, chances are pretty good you'll be well coordinated. Exercise strengthens the muscles to prevent falling, as I mentioned. Now here's another lifestyle factor that you may not have thought of, and that's spinach. Spinach, taken 4 or 5 times a week, maintains coordination. That's a good thing. And balance. That also helps you not to fall. Supports the eyes and parts of the brain. So there are many good things that can happen if you eat spinach. Well, I don't like spinach. It's all right. You can eat other greens, and the other greens will also do the same thing as spinach. One lady told me that she had been unable to pass the driver test, and her son told her that if she ate spinach at least 5 times a week, that it might help her eyes to increase their strength enough that she could get her driver license again. So she did that very thing. 6 months later, she took her driver test again and was awarded a driver license. So it might be that you would have the same kind of good experience. Okay, let's take the next thing. I love talking about this, especially to those who are very thin, like many in this audience are, but I also feel it my duty to talk with those who are not very thin. If your BMI, your body mass index, is over 25, you have serious health concerns already in your schedule. It's coming. And so what can you do if you have a BMI over 25? It's take the horse by the ears and make a decision. I'm going to make a change. Now, how do you do that? It's through prayer, through decision, and through a certain program that you put in place for yourself. Let's say you have a problem overeating. You just keep on eating after everybody else has finished. Then what you should do is to take your plate, put it on a tray with everything you're going to take for that meal. Nothing else is going to be allowed. You take that tray to a place away from the dining room and away from the kitchen, nowhere near the refrigerator. And everything that is not going to be eaten for that meal should be put away. Take your tray outside and then go into a back door to get to the bathroom after your tray is finished. You've eaten all that's on it. You're not going to go back to get more. And go into the bathroom and brush your teeth. If you will do these two things, eat away from the serving area and the cooking area and the refrigerator, and brush your teeth right after you're finished with it, you will find you're much less likely to nibble. Now, what should your BMI be? Well, apparently, maybe the ideal is from 18 to 22. If yours is a little under 18, that's probably all right too. Even people who are down to 15 may be fine. For the BMI, that's the body mass index. And you can certainly achieve that if you simply try. Make the determined effort and go after it. And it's also good if you have a buddy. Have a buddy who is going to be with you at every mealtime. That means that your buddy is either going to call you, "What did you eat?" And you have to report. Or they're going to call you and report what they ate, so that you can check on one another. You can be responsible to one another. And that is more helpful than one might think. Now, if you just look online, you can find out how to check your BMI. I also have it here on the slide if you would like to know what that is. Now, there's an alternate way to measure your BMI, but let me just tell you that for most people, there's a simple rule of thumb that will help you, and it is for your first 5 feet, you get 100 pounds. If you're a woman, for every 1 inch thereafter, you get 5 pounds. So it's for the first 5 feet, 100 pounds. Next inch, if you're a woman, it's 5 pounds. Next inch, it will be 10 from 100. Then it would be 110 if you're 5 feet 2. If you're 5 feet 5, what would you need to be ideal weight? About 125. And so you can figure it in that way. Now, what about for a man? Again, they get 100 pounds for the first 5 feet. Then they get 6 or 7 pounds per inch thereafter, depending on how muscular they are. So if it's a very muscular person, that person can get as much as 7 pounds per inch. But that's about it. Big bone, big muscles, only 1 more pound per inch. So don't feel that you can get 10 pounds because you have much heavier bones. 1/3 of Americans over 50 are chronically dehydrated. Let me just tell you about one story. A group of researchers checked out some medical school students, those who were in medical school at the time. Now, they perceived that medical students were health people wrongly. They are not normally health people. They are normally abusers of the health in almost every way, and one of them is by being chronically dehydrated. They found that 27% of the medical interns and students were already dehydrated when they were checked. If you are dehydrated, you have a number of things that are likely to be likely to be in your future. One is kidney stones. Another is reduced strength and endurance. And this is especially true for women. And I'd like to encourage women, especially at the time of periods, when they are likely to be losing fluid, not only in the menstrual fluid, but also in the skin and in the eyes. And some women tend to get a little bit more talkative at the time of their periods. And so for every hour that you talk, you lose 8 ounces of fluid. Well, that has to come from your blood. Your blood sort of keeps you stiffened out in your extremities and makes it so that you feel more energetic and you're happier. So in this way, you can keep yourself stronger if you simply keep plenty of water on board. Many women will set what they're going to take upstairs on the lowest step of the stairs, and then they get a whole pile of things before they go upstairs one time. If you happen to be overweight, go upstairs every time you have something to go, and go up as fast as you can. If you have weak muscles, especially weak legs, don't save up that trip upstairs. Go immediately and take it upstairs. And go up fast, it's true, then come down as slowly as you can, because coming downstairs slowly strengthens your muscles much better. There's an increased risk of stone of some cancers, especially cancers of the urinary tract, but also cancers of all glandular organs, such as the lungs, the liver, the skin, all kinds of glandular structures in the body that require exudation of a fluid for their functioning. These glandular organs are more likely to get a cancer. Now, there are some people who get an increased risk of strokes. Strokes are more likely to occur in people who are dehydrated, who have a natural proneness to getting a thrombosis, such as those who have a high fat diet. A high fat diet is going to cause a person to be more prone to clotting blood inside their blood vessels. So leave off the fat if you are prone to clot your blood inside your blood vessels, and get plenty of water. Also, eat plenty of foods that are high in folic acid, which will also reduce your likelihood of getting a thrombosis. There are especially some other cancers that are likely to occur in dehydration, and one of those is, of course, the prostate. Another is the breast. Another is the colon. All of these require us to have plenty of hydration in order to avoid these. Lubrication of the joints is another thing that is that requires plenty of water. Now, just think about this. We often think that since mechanical wheels and mechanical axles require grease, that our own joints require grease, but they don't. They require liquid. Our joints are lubricated by synovial fluid. This synovial fluid is watery, almost 100% water. And if your joint is hurting, if your knee is hurting, if your ankles hurt, or your fingers hurt, or you have a crick in the back or a crick in the neck from muscles not functioning well, drink a glass full of water every 10 minutes for an hour. And it's very likely that the pain will go away, the crick in the neck will go away, the joint will stop hurting you. Now, some other lifestyle factors. Here is one that you probably never thought of. Maybe you didn't even know. Poor chewing may cause brain cell loss. Did you know that before? Probably not. It was only discovered, I think, about 5 or 6 years ago when they found that chewing your food well will cause you to produce more dopamine. Dopamine is a neurohormone, and these neurohormones sort of all work together and may make you so that you're less likely to have a problem with your brain. High protein diets, that's another one. First one was chew your food well, small bites, chewed well, eaten slowly, that's the way to eat. But then another thing is high protein diets. High protein diets are so customary in American diets that we can say that protein is the toxin of Americans. Another way to state that is that most Americans are protein toxic. Ooh, that doesn't sound very good. But I have always thought that you're supposed to eat a lot of protein. And the answer is no, we have been wrong in teaching that. So now we're teaching don't eat too much protein. Protein can oxidize and can then become a big problem for you. Oxidized protein is more likely to occur from animal products than from products of plant-based diet. So get your protein from a plant-based diet as the most healthful diet that we can have. Glutamine synthetase is also, something that we need very much, and we can help to encourage long life if we get glutamine synthetase. That tends to break down some of the neurotransmitters, and so it's a great help to be in our diet. Abnormal protein, an abnormal protein called amyloid, this protein is one that deposits in the brain. And the next time I talk with you, I will talk with you about the brain and brain health, and I will talk more specifically about amyloid. Amyloid is a result of protein materials. It's a sort of a glycoprotein, meaning that it's both from carbohydrates as well as from protein, and this can deposit in the brain because it isn't broken down nicely, and this deposit in the brain can then cause you to be unable to transmit nerve impulses from one brain cell to another. Let's take some other lifestyle factors, and one is calorie restriction. If you reduce the calories, as I mentioned in the beginning, you will find that you will live longer. Now, I think that probably every item that I have mentioned here, somebody in medical science has disagreed with that. But on this point, so far as I know, there is not yet anyone who disagrees on this one point, and that is reduce your calories and it will lengthen your life. Most all the aging experts are quite agreed on that. The fewer the calories, the longer the life, the more youthfulness you have. Rodents who were given 40% less calories live 30% longer life. Severely restricted, they had a 50% longer lifespan than those who were on an ad lib diet. They could eat anytime they wished. 30% reduction lowers cholesterol in the blood and the blood pressure. It also lowers your risk of getting heart disease. Now the question of excitotoxins. Excitotoxins is a very controversial topic. Some people strongly believe in avoiding all excitotoxins, and some say you can eat some, and some say don't eat any. So let's define first what excitotoxins are. These are substances that have glutamate in them, such as monosodium glutamate, yeast, various things that have amino acids in them as flavoring agents, and soy sauce. All of these have excitotoxins or glutamates in them. And many, many other things have the excitotoxins in them, and the theory is that they excite the nerve cells so much that they become so overstimulated that they die from the overstimulation. It may be that this is a fact. My own personal attention of way of looking at this thing is that the if you eat a little, like a little salt, you can eat a little excitotoxins or a little soy sauce or a little Bragg's aminos or some other thing of this nature. Just like salt, you can have a little salt, and a little of it is a natural in the body. Glutamate is a natural in the body. Now, highly processed foods, fermented foods, and refined proteins, these are all places where you would expect to get excitotoxins. How do we like our food? Well, as fermented foods, as highly processed foods, and as refined proteins. So human nature being what it is, it tends to be what we like that is the most likely thing to make us so that we're not healthy. Okay, let's go to the next thing. These are blood chemistry factors, and I've tried to mention a number of things: lifestyle factors, psychological factors, strength factors, and so forth. And now let's take blood chemistry factors. If your homocysteine is up, then all-cause disease is also likely to be up. Homocysteine is a byproduct, an amino acid, in the production of cysteine from the thiamine. So as that goes to cysteine, there are several steps along the way, and one of those is homocysteine. If you do not have enough power and strength to push that process all the way through from the thiamine to cysteine, then you will probably stop the process at homocysteine. Homocysteine is a toxin in the body, and it is a thing that is likely to intoxicate all parts of the body, so that all-cause mortality goes up as your homocysteine goes up. How do you find out what your homocysteine is? It's only by a chemistry test. Now, I say that if you're accustomed to getting a physical exam every year as an annual physical, and that's something you religiously do because you think you're supposed to, and you don't have the money to get both a physical exam and a laboratory exam, then I say, get the laboratory exam, not the physical exam, because you do a physical exam on yourself every day. Think of it. You're feeling yourself here, or you're functioning with some part of your body here or there, or this part doesn't function well, or I don't swallow well, or can't talk well, or whatever it is that you may have that's wrong with you. You're doing that physical exam on yourself every day. So I say, go ahead and get the chemical exam, because, or the lab exam, because you cannot know what your homocysteine is in any other way except by getting a laboratory test. You cannot know what your white blood cell count is unless you get a blood cell count. You cannot know what your kidney functions are or what your liver functions are unless you get a lab test. So I say it's more important to get the lab test. Now, another thing is insulin resistance. Oh, before I go to there, let's go to iron. Is your iron elevated? Now, women are so accustomed to being told, your iron is down, you're anemic, you need to get iron. They're accustomed to hearing it so much so that when they get to be 55 or 60 and the hemoglobin goes up to about 14 grams, they say, ah, that's good, but that is not good. We now know that the ideal hemoglobin level for a woman over the age of 50 is probably about 12 to 13.3 or 13.5, not up to 14, although many laboratories will say that a woman could have up to 16 grams and still not be overweight in iron. But I say that long before that, she is already acting with her iron as a prooxidant. A prooxidant is something that accelerates the rate at which we age. And you know that all of our health talks are on antioxidants. And so fruits and vegetables, which are low in iron usually, these are more likely to be helpful for you than is a high iron content. So keep the iron down. How can you do that if it's already up? One is by walking, plentifully walking, and another is by eating garlic. Garlic is also, especially raw garlic, garlic will help you to keep your iron down. Now let's go to insulin resistance. Insulin resistance means that your cells have come to the place where they do not produce insulin receptors. And so your insulin goes up, attaches itself to a molecule of glucose, and would take it into the cell if it can find a receptor, or what we might call a port of entry. So it goes to a port of entry, looks for it, doesn't find it, and so it turns away with the glucose with it. So your blood sugar goes up, but your insulin level goes up as well. When insulin goes up, so does your risk of heart attack, high blood pressure, strokes, cancer, diabetes. All of these go up as insulin resistance, or the port of entry for the insulin. As that goes down, then these other things go up, and you're more likely to have crippling disease. Now, the next thing I'd like to mention is that of adequate growth hormone. Growth hormone for adults is very important for us. It makes things run better. We're happier. We're less likely to be depressed. We're more likely to be well-organized and energetic. And so what can you do to make your growth hormone in good shape? Well, here's the only way that we know, and that is going to bed early. How early? Well, at least 3 hours before midnight. That means by about 9 o'clock. If you can get into bed by 9 o'clock, you'll get a good little bit of growth hormone. If you do not get into bed before midnight, you will not get growth hormone that day, because growth hormone is only produced during sleep and only produced during the early part of the night. And by midnight, it's almost all gone, or your ability to produce it or release it is almost all gone. And so that's something that's a help to you. So the next thing that we'll talk about is going to be, next slide, please. Would you give us the next slide? Yes, there we go. Anti-aging herbs. Do you know about those? Well, let's take a few. First is ginkgo. If you have a memory loss and you take ginkgo, it is quite likely that you will have a better memory than you had before. So that's good. So you can take ginkgo. It is not toxic, so you can take it ad lib. It also has a little antioxidant property, anticoagulant property, and it has an anti-cancer property. So it has many good herbal properties. Flaxseed and its oil. Flaxseed is a thing that can help you to have an anti-inflammatory action for yourself. Flaxseed is one of the best of the anti-inflammatories that I know. Another anti-inflammatory is that of white willow bark. That's a good one. One of the best in the world is understood now to be turmeric. Turmeric is that yellow spice that Indian cuisines use a lot, and we can use it a lot in American cuisines and in many others. Or you can simply take it, half teaspoonful with every meal. Now, you can know if you're taking too much turmeric if your stomach begins to ache a little bit, and that is the stomach itself. It may irritate your stomach a little bit. That is in some people, not everybody, but some people will get that. turmeric used in your food can help you to have an anti-cancer property constantly in your lifestyle. It is believed that one of the reasons why certain groups of Indians, East Indians, certain groups of them have very little in the way of certain cancers can make it so that they is because they eat so much in the way of turmeric. Flaxseed can be taken 2 tablespoons full, freshly ground. I'd like to point out that. You should not get the already bought and ground flaxseed. That's not proper. You will not get the anti-inflammatory properties. You will also not get the omega-3 fatty acids from flaxseed, which is one thing that we really depend on for omega-3 fatty acids. You will not get that if it's already ground and you've got it sitting on the shelf, or the grocer has it sitting on his shelf for some weeks or months. You will not get the amount of good that you could get from flaxseed if you take it fresh from the refrigerator, grind it in a little seed mill right on your own table, and sprinkle it on your cereal. Ginseng is also good. Gotchucola is also good. Ashwagandha is good. Ashwagandha, I'd like to say a word about. Ashwagandha has some anti-cancer properties, anti-inflammatory properties. And by the way, the inflammation of the brain that causes people to get Alzheimer's disease, that can, by the anti-inflammatory herbs, this can help you to reduce and slow down the aging process. Ashwagandha gives people energy, and especially so when they're recuperating from an illness. And in old age, people who need some energy, ashwagandha can be helpful to them. Hawthorn berry, we usually think of hawthorn berry as being the herb for the heart, and it is. It is one of the very best. But hawthorn berry also has an anti-inflammatory property that makes most people prefer the hawthorn berry for its anti-inflammatory properties than its cardiac properties. CoQ10 is also called ubiquinone. Ubiquinone, the word ubiquitous means that it's present everywhere, and so you need to look for it in all your food that we would expect to be from plant sources. Schizandra chinensis, that's another of these types of herbs that can slow down aging. Some tests for Alzheimer's disease, some signs of reduced memory, that's one, slowed or halting speech, slowed movements, difficult decision making, and the hygiene deteriorates. I remember one time when a lady who worked with me took her aging aunt into her own home, which also happened to be my home. And she would always call me on Friday nights to come in to help her get her aunt into the tub. She gave her at least one full bath a week, and that often meant 2 people to get her into the tub. That's from Alzheimer's disease. That's one of the signs. So if your aging person is deteriorating in the hygiene, be a little bit afraid of that, because it might mean there's a problem brewing. Clock face drawing. It's interesting that people who have Alzheimer's cannot draw the 12 positions of the hours and put the proper hands on them. They may put the hours on the outside or all of them over on one side only. It's amazing that this is such a good test for that. Making change is another one. Making change with coins. Almost anybody who is old enough to get Alzheimer's is old enough also to make change with coins. If they cannot do it, then there must be a problem. Then another one is REM, or rapid eye movement sleep. This should begin in 84 hours after going to sleep, and if it's as long as 120 minutes after going to sleep, let me repeat that. It should be 84 minutes if it's as much as 122 minutes after going to sleep, then it's likely to represent an Alzheimer's type of pattern. REM sleep is that kind that you can actually see. So if somebody sits up and watches Grandpa as he goes to sleep, and if he delays in having the rapid eye movement, which you can actually see even in dim light, then it may be that he is getting a problem. Some tests for Alzheimer's disease. A spinal tap can be done. There's a genetic test, but there's a pupil dilation test. If you go to the ophthalmologist and he puts the drops in the eyes and your pupils don't dilate, he has to come back and put drops in the eyes again to make your pupils dilate, then that may be a bad sign. Allergy tests also reveal that many allergies are often present for the person who is getting Alzheimer's disease. Now, there are certain neurotoxic chemicals in the environment that can make people get Alzheimer's disease, such things as high iron. That can be in your water. It can be in your food. You can see it if a faucet drips on a porcelain sink. You can see that the iron accumulates there, and that may be a sign that your environment is toxic. Depression, migraines, thyroid disease, diabetes, hypertension, epilepsy in childhood, severe malnutrition, especially in childhood, electric fields or shock therapy, electroshock therapy in psychiatric disorders. All of these may be something that can cause you to have Alzheimer's disease. Use of the pill for long periods of time, or use of hormone replacement therapy for long periods of time. Those may increase your likelihood of getting Alzheimer's disease early. Having frequent TIAs or transient ischemic attacks, trauma to the brain. Then deficiencies in vitamin B12, deficiencies in B6, and deficiencies in folic acid, poor chewing, poor cooking of grains, and low exercise, all of these may be a problem. One thing about low cooking of grains, if you do not cook your grains enough, then the particles of the grain that does not completely hydrolyze during the cooking process may be small enough to get into your blood vessels, but not small enough to avoid getting into some of your smallest capillaries. So you have a capillary meshwork, such as the capillary meshwork in the adrenal glands, in the brain, in the joints, in certain of your nerves. Poor cooking of grains can allow these to come along, so they come along a main channel, and then they get to a place where the capillaries branch, and because it's too big to go through a small capillary, it has been big enough to get to here, but it can't go through these small capillary meshworks, and then it stops right here, and you get a little micro abscess in the area where you did have blood vessels that were filled. So important to cook your grains long. How long is long? Well, we tested in the laboratory at UT Pines one time and found that if we did not cook rice more than 2.5 to 3 hours, it was not cooked enough. If we did not cook our corn grits, which we are fond of in the South, the corn grits need about 5 hours of cooking. That means a slow cooker overnight. In fact, all of our grains can be cooked in a slow cooker overnight. Now, someone is going to say, but that means that there won't be any nutrient left if we cook it that long. And I will say, no, some of the tender vitamins will be lost, but there are also some very important micronutrients that we cannot get except in prolongedly cooked grains. So let me recommend to you that you cook your grains a long time. If you are prone to sleep apnea, correct whatever condition it is that's making you have sleep apnea. Now, if you have a person in your family who has Alzheimer's disease, let me encourage you to join a support group. join the support group early, because you will learn a lot of things on how to take care of your aging relative or aging friend by joining a support group. One lady told me that her husband was such a talker after he got old that it just wore her out every day. She was so tired by the end of the day. So somebody told her in the support group to get a large mirror and put it in front of him and let him talk to himself. And so she did. She put the mirror there and he talked to himself, and she stopped. She began to not go crazy anymore. Then you should Alzheimer-proof your whole house too. And one thing is, if your Alzheimer person is likely to be a wanderer, take the shoes away, and that will help you. Now, most people don't know that the United States is most likely to have a hip fracture since we have such good nourishment, but it's because of our high use of dairy and our high protein diet, and that leaches our bones from calcium, and that makes us be more likely to have hip fractures.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's Word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.